From lashes for days with the Viral Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara to lift and color from their Brilliant Eye Brightener, Thrive Cosmetics is the go-to for amplifying everyday looks. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
Hey guys, today I will be sharing another hot off the press segment with you. In case you didn't listen to my recent Jack Palance episode, or maybe this is your first episode, welcome if so, I've made the difficult decision to go to a bi-weekly release schedule for my new stories. It has just become nearly impossible for me to keep up with the insane amount of research, writing, recording, and editing required each week. And I don't want to rush through any of our star stories. So as I calm my incredibly overwhelmed mind as of late, and enjoy time in vacation paradise as we speak when this episode comes out, I didn't want to leave you hanging this week. So today I will be sharing some fun and entertaining content from a vintage Hollywood movie magazine. And then we'll be heading into our new every other week format as I continue my research on our next star. But it is only temporary. I'm not sure how temporary, but I will get back to weekly. That is my ultimate goal. I'm going to do my very best to get ahead on my research and writing and be able to get back to that weekly format once life calms down a bit. I just really want to make sure that all of our stars are getting the attention they deserve. And having a full-time job on top of all the hours required to turn out these stories just finally caught up with me. Those jobs get in the way of all the fun, don't they? I can't complain, though. I have the best job in the world. This particular magazine I'm using today was a very special gift from a very special listener of the show, Anna. Thank you, Anna. It was a really fun issue to thumb through. From this issue of Modern Screen from 1961, I will be sharing with you some behind-the-scenes deets about the Rat Pack. And I'll also be sharing with you about Gary Merrill's post-Betty Davis romance with Rita Hayworth. I'll be sharing an interview with Natalie Wood from shortly after the ending of her first marriage to Robert Wagner. And I'll share a few things gossip columnist Luella Parsons had to say, including her experience at Judy Garland's famous Hollywood Bowl performance. She knew everything that was going on, you know. And if you want to hear more from Luella Parsons' 8-page gossip spread from this issue of Modern Screen, I share it on this month's cocktail party over on Patreon, where you can find all of our wonderful bonus content. On this month's cocktail party episode from this issue of Modern Screen magazine, you can hear about Marlon Brando, Rita Moreno, Marilyn Monroe, Frank Sinatra, and more. Luella Parsons had all the dirt that month. So without further ado, I present to you entertaining content straight out of the December 1961 issue of Modern Screen magazine. First, let's check in with the Rat Pack. The Rat Pack was originated by Humphrey Bogart. Originally, it was called the Holmby Hills Rat Pack because Bogey and his cronies resided in this swank cul-de-sac area between Beverly Hills and Bel Air. They were an exclusive coterie of males who got together whenever the spirit des spirits moved them. No dues, no meetings. Just get-togethers at houses or restaurants for discourses on all sorts of topics, from Bach, Beethoven and Brahms, to broads. Frequently, they were kicked out of places because of their rowdiness. Their favorite luncheon place was Romanoff's in Beverly Hills, where they were always seated in the same booth, near the bar. When Bogey died and Sinatra began escorting widow Lauren Bacall, Frank, a fringe member who also lived in Holmby Hills, apparently became enamored of Bogey's playfulness as reported by the Rat Pack in Memoriam, and so took over the mantle of leadership and admitted his own private social circle of friends previously known as the Clan. Membership is by royal appointment only. Sinatra is king, regent, and dictator. His inner court consists of Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Peter Lawford, and Joey Bishop. All others, such as Shirley MacLaine, the Tony Curtises, Nat Wood and Bob Wagner, Sammy Kahn, are all fringe members. They do prank things, and when they feel Hollywood is being too harsh on anyone, beware of the Klan. They swoop in like eagles to save the wounded ones. They have disdain for the pompous and the imperious moguls. They are the angels of mercy to many who don't even know the source, especially when it comes to the ill and hospitalized. Then the Klan, the Rat Pack, really shows its true colors. They arrange for the best accommodations, doctors, nurses, flowers, candies, books, gags, and games. They call disc jockeys and say, "Listen, did you know Judy Garland was rushed to the hospital in Massachusetts? How about playing that album of hers at the palace?" From the local lads to the East Coast platter spinners, they cover them all, and suddenly, while you were reading about Judy's indisposition, you are also aware of her in your ear if your radio is tuned on. That's a sample of how they operate. There are many, many other ways, all good, which they won't tolerate being accused of. They like the public to think they are a band of unruly boys out for some harum-scarum fun. But don't you believe it. As the old saying goes, so goes the Rat Pack. Heaven can see their mischievous faces, but the angels know what is in their hearts. And now on to Natalie Wood, a young wife's tragic story. And if you want to take a bummer of a journey, go back and listen to my three-part story of her life and death. It's not a really fun ride. Natalie was perched on a white leather chair in her temporary home at 10614 Shallon Road in Bel Air when she discussed the problems and frustrations of being a divorcee. The house itself is unusual for the plush Bel Air neighborhood. She is renting it from producer Jimmy Wolf, who has a long lease on the two-bedroom house. It is located on a couple of acres of ground and set back from the street approximately 50 yards, perhaps more. The house is completely hidden from view behind hedges and wild growth from Shallon Road. As you drive up the narrow dirt approach to the dwelling, the first thing you see is a small servant's building to the left. At the right, and directly in front of the house, is a swimming pool, sloping lawn, and a pool house complete with barbecue fixings. From the outside, the house has a low, slanting shingle roof, white walls, and the general appearance of a modern California split-level farmhouse. Inside, it is ultra-modern and almost completely white. The white walls are broken by clusters of multicolored prints which break the monotony. All the furniture and fixtures belong to Wolf, although Natalie has some of her own paintings in evidence, including one of herself that makes her look much older and more sophisticated than she is. Sitting beneath this picture, Natalie looked like her own daughter. The entry hall is a part of the living room-dining room combination, giving a spacious feeling to the entire house. To the left of the entry is the kitchen, just off the dining room. To the right are a low flight of stairs which lead to two bedrooms and baths. However, Natalie is using one of the bedrooms as an office, which is occupied during the day by her male secretary, Mark Crowley. Natalie gave the appearance of living at the house temporarily, which, in fact, she admits. "I love this place," she said, "but I guess I won't be staying here too long. I just moved in because there were too many memories at the house RJ and I bought in Beverly Hills. I lived there for a while after we broke up, but it was just too much. I had to leave. I plan to go to New York by the end of September for several weeks for the premieres of my two movies, Splendor in the Grass and West Side Story. After that, I'm not sure what I'll do. Maybe I'll go to Europe. I've never been there before, and I could use a vacation." Reminded that Robert Wagner was in Europe to star in Xanax The Longest Day, Natalie said she wouldn't avoid seeing her estranged husband if she were in the same area. "I don't know," she said. "Maybe the whole thing is a pipe dream. Anyway, I have no plans to make any pictures for a while. I'm on a leave of absence from Warner Brothers, just trying to enjoy myself. What does Natalie do with so much free time? Oh, I swim in the pool or go down to the beach, she said. And I'm doing tons of shopping. I bought a whole new wardrobe. Clothes are good for a girl's morale when there is a big change in her life. I mean, like there was in mine. Natalie also said she visited friends working in pictures. One friend is Warren Beatty, an old friend of RJ's who formerly was a steady date of actress Joan Collins. Natalie has joined Warren several times for lunch at the MGM studio, where he is starring in All Fall Down. She also has picked him up after work on more than one occasion, and they have been seen walking hand in hand around the lot. Natalie and Warren see one another almost every evening, but snoopers can't catch a glimpse of either of Warren's cars, both rented, a 1961 baby blue Thunderbird and a 1961 red Chevrolet convertible, once he has pulled in behind the protective hedges fronting Natalie's home. Asked if she planned to marry again, Natalie said, "It's too soon to talk about that, or to even think about it. Those rumors that have me getting married to someone else within a few months are crazy. They're not true. Will there be a reconciliation with RJ? I couldn't say," Natalie answered. "I was married 3.5 years, and it's difficult for me to imagine how it will be to be single again. I get upset and don't like to think about the situations. I guess I'm as happy as I can expect to be. Maybe I'll feel better about our separation in the future," she went on. "Looking back on something like this is better than going through it. In 2 or 3 months, I'll have a better perspective on what's happened. It's hard to be objective right now. I'm sort of at loose ends." It is difficult to determine whether Natalie is an excellent actress playing the role of an unhappy divorcee, or whether she merely is reflecting her true feelings. It's hard to believe her life is shattered when she has seen so much of Beatty. And if she and Warren were nothing more than friends, the question arises why she goes to such great lengths to avoid discussing him. Most people aren't worried about discussing casual friends. She won't even say what it was like starring with him in Splendor in the Grass. It was during the making of this picture that the rumors first sprang up that Natalie and RJ were having their domestic problems. "There's no sense in looking back," she says. "The thing to do is to try to understand yourself. I'm not sorry I was married. I must try to evaluate the past and learn from it. Someday I would like to have children, and I guess I should be grateful that I didn't have any. It would have been terrible for children when RJ and I separated. And when I do have children, I don't think I'd ever want them to be child performers like I was. It robs them of a normal, happy childhood." Natalie isn't sure what adjustment she will make to face the future, but she seems unafraid and almost defiant. "Rumors here in Hollywood have me going out with people I've never even met, but I'm not going to let it upset me," she said. "Even though I've grown up in Hollywood, I still can't get used to all the gossip. But I've come to a point in my life now where I don't have to do anything but live the way I want to." And a little bit more about Natalie in the gossip column from Luella Parsons. Poor girl just couldn't have her peace. Again, listen to my 3-part series to hear what was going on during this time, because we're not hearing the full story, of course, as it happened here. This is from Luella Parsons in her gossip spread. The latest on Natalie, Warren, and Bob. If Natalie Wood and Warren Beatty aren't the real thing, they'll do until closer dancing, deeper eye-gazing, and more ardent hand-holding comes along. Just as she did when she and Bob Wagner were so deeply in love, Natalie goes everywhere with Warren, even when he's getting his hair cut, and she would have accompanied him to Key West, Florida on his location for All Fall Down if she hadn't been scared off by the terrible hurricanes. It isn't fair to mention names, but one of the young actors just came back from Europe where he worked in The Longest Day with Bob Wagner and told me, "RJ just simply can't believe it's really serious between Nat and Warren. Oh sure, he's read about them in all the gossip columns both here and in Europe. but it's kind of touching the way he says, whether he believes it or not, that he doesn't believe it is anything serious. RJ is keeping his chin up and keeping busy, the best thing he could do. But I had many heart-to-heart talks with him, and he keeps hoping against hope that he and Natalie can get together. I know it is the dearest wish of his life that his marriage can be saved. He talks about Nat all the time. I'm sure that RJ and Joan Collins, ex-fiancé of Warren Beatty, had much to discuss when they dated recently in London. Only, I hear, Joan is more bitter and caustic over the turn of events and not carrying a torch as Bob is. Let's see what Luella Parsons has to say about Elizabeth Taylor and Eddie Fisher. This is titled, Cleopatra Never Had It So Good. The real Cleo never got her barge as far as Rome. But if she had, she couldn't be living it up more luxuriously than Elizabeth Taylor, who, with Eddie Fisher and the children plus entourage, is there making the long-delayed Cleopatra. My spy reports, the Fisher's pink villa, set in a park in the middle of Rome, adjoins the Moroccan embassy. It has 14 rooms, 8 large Roman baths, sunken green marble swimming pool, and a tennis court. Recently, 5 crates of the children's pets arrived, so the place is now well-stocked with dogs, cats, and Elizabeth's pet monkey. There is nothing like these touches to make even a palazzo seem like home. Eddie's Rolls-Royce, which is always parked in the driveway, arrived via boat with the children, who had been escorted by Liz's secretary, Dick Hanley. Despite all these fancy fittings, the Fishers have barely been around the place. They had no more than arrived when they set sail on Sam Spiegel's yacht for Capri. Now Liz is back in Rome for costume and makeup tests. 2 star dressing rooms at the studio have been converted into 1 large suite for Elizabeth, and an adjoining 3-room office has been set up for Eddie. As for Cleopatra itself, all Rome is abuzz over the magnificent sets. For lushness and elaborateness, they make the sets put up for Ben-Hur look like a B-picture. Incidentally, you may be glad to know that the Italian climate seems to be agreeing with the beautiful Elizabeth. She has felt very well since she's been here, which is good news, particularly to 20th Century Fox. It all sounds like Cleopatra herself never had it so good. And now, just a little of the very, very long article titled, Rita Hayworth and Gary Merrill, For Love or For Laughs. Luella Parsons brings you the truth about the new and zany romance that has set all Hollywood on its ear. Is it love or just laughs? Whatever it is that the former love goddess Rita Hayworth and Gary Merrill, very recent ex-husband of Bette Davis, have found together, I can tell you it has the whole town practically on its ear. Never as long as I've known Rita have I known her to be a part of such an outlandish and zany romance. As witness, Rita and Gary showing up in smart dining spots in their bare feet. Gary's accompanying Rita to the beauty parlor every time she gets her hair set, her nails manicured, or her tootsies pedicured. And perhaps most startling of all, they're driving with as much speed as the La Laos up and down the roads from Malibu to Beverly Hills in a top-down sports car, with Rita's daughters, Princess Yasmin and Rebecca Wells, ensconced, happy and windblown, on the back seat. And then Luella Parsons talks about a call she received from Rita Hayworth. She sounded so gay, so happy, and so carefree, I could hardly believe it was she. Particularly since, at this time, she was in the process of divorcing her producer-director husband, James Hill. And I've always found Rita to be blue and on the downbeat side when a love in her life ends. You certainly seem to be flying high, I said to the cheerful voice at the end of the line. Rita, what is this all about you and Gary Merrill? Are you in love again? Are you going to marry him when you both are free? There was a chuckle in the lady's voice. We're not going to get married. I've been married often enough, don't you think? Not necessarily, I replied. Not if you found happiness with someone as interesting and talented as Gary. Rita said, growing more serious in tone, I'll tell you the truth. Gary and I have a wonderful time together. He's a very intelligent man and a superb actor, with all his delightful nonsense, all his fun. But he has another very marked side, his seriousness about his work. When he's working either on the stage or on the screen, he's a perfectionist. I have found this out while we have been going over the script for the movie we'll make together on the carousel. Gary has such wonderful and original ideas. He is completely dedicated to anything he undertakes. I guess you might sum him up with, when he plays, he plays. And when he works, he works. I could readily agree with Rita about Gary's talent. Last year, before trouble broke up Bette Davis and Meryl, I had seen them in An Evening with Carl Sandburg at the Huntington Hartford Theater in Hollywood, and it was a memorable evening of entertainment. Bette, as expected, was wonderful, but Gary was superb. I had known him to be a good actor, but I hadn't realized how very fine he was until I saw him hold his audience in the palm of his hand as he read magnificently the little and big poems of Sandburg. But getting back to my talk with Rita, I laughed. Most of us are being treated to gossip about you and Gary at play these days, not at work. What is all the business about you two showing up barefooted almost everywhere you go? Rita's laugh was hearty as she replied, We weren't really in our bare feet. Both Gary and I were wearing pronged sandals during those awfully hot days and nights. They don't cover much of the foot, and I suppose at a casual glance you might look barefooted, but they are so comfortable. We didn't think we were doing anything out of order. Both of us were surprised when the columnist took it up and made so much of it. All out of proportion, I think. I said, Well, when you are as important a star as you are, everything you do is magnified. I have known Rita in many moods when she is in love. But whether this is for love or for laughs, I've never known her to be so carefree and devil-may-care as she is since she's been dating Gary Merrill. And one more thing, Judy Garland's performance at the Hollywood Bowl. Here's what Luella Parsons said. It's titled, Singin' in the Rain. Only Judy Garland, the beloved little Over the Rainbow girl, could have jam-packed the Hollywood Bowl on the rainy, misty night of her one-woman concert. If Judy had any doubts about how much her hometown and fellow workers love her, she learned this moist night. Everyone was bundled up from chin to ankles, but the affection that flowed out to the little star and the wild acclaim that greeted each familiar number was warm and affectionate. We were guests at the concert and later at Judy's welcoming home party at Romanoff's, given by the Freddie Fields. Freddie is the impresario who has so successfully managed Judy's comeback for the past 2 years. In our box were the David Jansons and the Walter Langs. And next to us were Jack and Mary Benny and Ann and Kirk Douglas. Jimmy McHugh was my escort, and loud was the applause when Judy sang his unforgettable, I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby, as only Judy can sing that perennial favorite. Also saw Mervyn LeRoy, in whose picture, The Wizard of Oz, Judy sang the wonderful number which was to become her theme song, Over the Rainbow, so many years ago. Other old friends were producer Arthur Freed and Roger Edens, the latter the arranger of so many of Judy's movies and shows. Later, when the little star made her triumphant entrance into Romanoff's, she greeted Mrs. Gary Cooper and Maria, the Johnny Greens, Rock Hudson and Marilyn Maxwell, the William Getzes, Glenn Ford and Hope Lang, Julia Mead with Ross Hunter, and others too numerous to mention. Wet night or not, it was a big, big night for our Judy. Well, that's where I'm going to leave it for today. And then on our next episode, we'll get back into a star biography, Miss Veronica Lake. If you want to hear more from Luella Parsons' gossip column from the pages of this December 1961 issue of Modern Screen Magazine I read from today, please head on over to patreon.com/starsofthegoldenagepodcast. And you can get that, paired with a delicious vintage cocktail recipe and history, And you would get access to the entire backlog of bonus content. It's a lot of good stuff. Come join us and give this little indie podcast a little support. I promise to make it worth your small monthly contribution. Thank you so much for joining me today for this fun vintage content. Hot off the press. Reach for the positive in every day. Be kind to everyone you encounter. And please have a great rest of your week. For this episode, I used the December 1961 issue of Modern Screen Magazine.